Sluggito da Shiva.
45.
I was planning to get in touch with Mr. Lee's Greater Hong Kong and file a complaint about their proconsul here in Port Sherman. Hero jokes. He was very uncooperative this morning when I insisted on renting this boat out from under you. Hero is sitting in the first-class dining room of the Kowloon. On the other side of the white linen tablecloth is the man Hero had previously pegged as the industry creep on vacation. He's impeccably dressed in a black suit, and he has a glass eye. He is not bothered to introduce himself, as though he's expecting Hero to know who he is already. The man does not seem amused by Hero's story. He seems rather nonplussed.
So?
Don't see any reason to file a complaint now, Hero says.
Why not?
Well, because now I understand his reluctance not to displace you guys.
How come? You got money, don't you?
Yeah, but...
Oh,
the man with the glass eye says, and allows himself sort of a forced smile.
Because we're the Mafia, you're saying.
Yeah, Hero says, feeling his face get hot. Nothing like making a total dickhead out of yourself. Nothing in the world like it. No siree, Bob. Outside, the gun battle is just a dim roar. This dining room is insulated from noise, water, wind, and hot flying lead by a double layer of remarkably thick glass, and the space between the panes is full of something cool and gelatinous. The roar does not seem as steady as it used to be.
Fucking machine guns, the man says.
I hate 'em. Maybe 1 out of 1,000 rounds actually hit something worth hitting, and they kill my ears.
You want some coffee or something?
That'd be great. We got a big buffet coming up soon. Bacon, eggs, fresh fruit you wouldn't believe.
The guy that Hero saw earlier up on the deck, pounding binocular man on the back, sticks his head into the room.
Excuse me, boss, but we're moving into, like, the third phase of our plan. Just thought you'd want to know. Thank you, Livio.
Let me know when the Ivans make it to the pier.
The guy sips his coffee, notices Hero looking confused.
See, we got a plan, and the plan is divided up into different phases.
Yeah, I got that.
The first phase was immobilization, taking out their chopper. Then we had phase two, which is making them think we were trying to kill them in the hotel. I think that this phase succeeded wonderfully.
Me too.
Thank you. Another important part of this phase was getting your ass in here, which is also done.
I'm part of this plan?
The man with the glass eye smiles crisply.
If you were not part of this plan, you would be dead.
So you knew I was coming to Port Sherman? You know that chick YT? The one you have been using to spy on us?
Yeah. No point in denying it.
Well, we have been using her to spy on you.
Why? Why the hell do you care about me?
That would be a tangent from our main conversation, which is about all the phases of the plan.
Okay. We just finished phase two.
Now, in phase three, which is ongoing, we allow them to think that they are making an incredible heroic escape, running down the street toward the pier.
Phase four!
Shouts Livio, the lieutenant.
Scusi,
the man with the glass eye says, scooting his chair back, folding his napkin back onto the table. He gets up and walks out of the dining room. Hero follows him above deck. A couple of dozen Russians are all trying to force their way through the gate onto the pier. Only a few of them can get through at once, and so they end up strung out over a couple of 100 feet, all running toward the safety of the Kodiak Queen. But a dozen or so manage to stay together in a clump, a group of soldiers forming a human shield around a smaller cluster of men in the center.
Bigwigs,
the man with the glass eye says, shaking his head philosophically. They all run crab-like down the pier, bent down as far as they can go, firing the occasional covering burst of machine gun fire back into Port Sherman. The man with the glass eye is squinting against a cool, sudden breeze. He turns to Hero with a hint of a grin.
Check this out, he says, and presses a button on a little black box in his hand.
The explosion is like a single drumbeat coming from everywhere at once. Hiro can feel it coming up out of the water, shaking his feet. There's no big flame or cloud of smoke, but there is a sort of twin geyser effect that shoots out from underneath the Kodiak Queen, sending jets of white steamy water upward like unfolding wings. The wings collapse in a sudden downpour, and then the Kodiak Queen seems shockingly low in the water. Low and getting lower. All the men who are running down the pier suddenly stop in their tracks.
Now,
binocular man mumbles into his lapel. There are some smaller explosions down on the pier. The entire pier buckles and writhes like a snake in the water. One segment in particular, the segment with the bigwigs on it, is rocking and seesawing violently, smoke rising from both ends. It has been blown loose from the rest of the pier. All of its occupants fall down in the same direction as it jerks sideways and begins to move, yanked out of its place. Hiro can see the tow cable rising up out of the water as it is stretched tight, running a couple of hundred feet to a small open boat with a big motor on it, which is now pulling out of the harbor. There's still a dozen bodyguards on the segment. One of them sizes up the situation, aims his AK-47 across the water at the boat that's towing them, and loses his brains. There's a sniper on the top deck of the Kowloon. All the other bodyguards throw their guns into the water.
Time for phase five, the man with the glass eye says. A big fucking breakfast.
By the time he and Hiro have sat back down in the dining room, the Kowloon has pulled away from the pier and is headed down the fjord, following a course parallel to the smaller boat that is towing the segment. As they eat, they can look out the window across a few hundred yards of open water and see the segment keeping pace with them. All the bigwigs and the bodyguards are on their asses now, keeping their centers of gravity low as the segment bucks nastily.
When we get farther away from land, the waves get bigger, the man with the glass eye says.
I hate that shit. All I want is to hang on to the breakfast long enough to tamp it down with some lunch.
Amen, says Livio, heaping some scrambled eggs onto his plate.
Are you going to pick those guys up? Hiro says. Or just let them stay out there for a while?
Fuck 'em. Let them freeze their asses off. Then when we bring them onto this boat, they'll be ready for it. Won't put up too much of a fight. Hey, maybe they'll even talk to us.
Everyone seems pretty hungry. For a while, they just dig into breakfast. After a while, the man with the glass eye breaks the ice by announcing how great the food is, and everyone agrees. Hiro figures it's okay to talk now.
I was wondering why you guys were interested in me.
Hiro figures that this is always a good thing to know in the case of the Mafia.
We're all in the same happy gang,
the man with the glass eye says.
Which gang is that?
Lagos' gang.
Huh?
Well, it's not really his gang, but he's the guy who put it together. The nucleus around which it formed.
How and why and what are you talking about?
Okay.
He shoves his plate away from him, folds up his napkin, puts it on the table.
Lagos had all these ideas. Ideas about all kinds of stuff.
So I noticed.
He had stacks all over the place on all different topics. Stacks where he would pull together knowledge from all over the fucking map and tie it all together. He had these things stashed here and there around the metaverse, waiting for the information to become useful.
More than one of them? Hiro says.
Supposedly. Well, a few years ago, Lagos approached El Bob Reif.
He did?
Yeah. See, Reif has a million programmers working for him. He was paranoid that they were stealing his data.
I know that he was bugging their houses and so on.
The reason you know that is because you found it in Lagos' stack. And the reason Lagos bothered to look it up is because he was doing market research, looking for someone who might pay him hard cash for the stuff he dug up in the Babylon Apocalypse stack.
He thought, Hiro says, that El Bob Reif might have a use for some viruses.
Right. See, I don't understand all this shit.
But I guess he found an old virus or something that was aimed at the elite thinkers.
The technological priesthood, Hero says. The infocrats. It wiped out the whole infocracy of Sumer.
Whatever.
That's crazy, Hero says. That's like if you find out your employees are stealing ballpoint pens, you take them out and kill them. He wouldn't be able to use it without destroying all his programmers' minds.
In its original form, the man with the glass eye says. But the whole point is, Lagos wanted to do research on it.
Informational warfare research.
Bingo. He wanted to isolate this thing and modify it so it could be used to control the programmers without blowing their brains sky high.
And did it work?
Who knows? Rife stole Lagos' idea. Just took it and ran with it. And after that, Lagos had no idea what Rife did with it. But a couple of years later, he started getting worried about a lot of stuff he was seeing.
Like the explosive growth in Reverend Wayne's pearly gates.
And these Ruskies who speak in tongues. And the fact that Rife was digging up this old city.
Eridu.
Yeah. And the radio astronomy thing. Lagos had a lot of stuff he was worried about. So he began to approach people.
He approached us.